Welcome Policy Fellow at the South African Institute of Race Relations, Sarah Gon.
Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Well, thank you. And you? All the better for the rain?
Yep, absolutely. I think it's marvelous. Sarah, do you remember the referendum where white people voted that black people should get the vote?
I remember both. And the one was a tricameral, which came earlier, which was what it was, and it was actually a farce. The referendum for the vote was essentially whether white voters supported the move towards, genuine multiracialism.
I remember, and you had to vote yes or no.
I'd have to go back and look at it because I lived through it, but I it's actually a period that I've kind of haven't thought about.
Okay, I've just looked it up. 17th of March, 1992. Mm-hmm. It was known as the referendum on ending apartheid. Was held in South Africa, and this is on Wikipedia. Simon, don't look
where,
at me
where
like
was
that.
I? Where was Sarah? Why do
I
we not remember
no
this?
I have no idea. Sarah does remember this.
Basically, it was, if I recall correctly, it was essentially to give F.W. de Klerk the go-ahead. In other words, to put a space between him and the more verkrumped members
system.
Of the NAT and the Hessische Nationale Partei.
Yes. And the result of the election was a large victory for the yes side, which ultimately resulted in apartheid being lifted. Universal suffrage was introduced two years later. So let's just talk about this because nobody actually mentions that. And I think that kind of leads into and segues into you talking about the myth of the ANC being the liberating party. Was it? Or is it?
Well, it wasn't in the sense that I think we commonly accept it, which is, look, let's put it this way. The victor always writes or rewrites history. And I think that's what, to some extent, what we are suffering from. The reason I think the referendum was held was part of the response F.W. de Klerk had towards the collapse of the Berlin Wall. In other words, with formal communism disappearing, it was trying to shore up, his position in eventually ending up with multi-party negotiations and elections. That's essentially the essence of it.
Right. Okay.
I'm really interested in this topic because it's hugely controversial. Why are you alluding to the fact that the ANC, why are we talking about the myth?
Okay. It actually came from something you mentioned just before last week's program. I wasn't involved at the time. I was just listening, and I think I didn't get the whole. Obviously, I didn't get the whole discussion, but the mention was made of the fact that, in light of the fact that the ANC kind of won freedom for South Africa,
yes, I remember it well.
They had a certain
legitimacy, and how could a black person vote for anything else?
And you know, it would take a while to overcome that. And essentially, I'm just saying that, well, there are two things. One is I think that legitimacy is misplaced, but irrespective of whether anyone agrees with me or not, the point is that politics is actually just a dirty game everywhere, and that when you want to fight an election, parties fight elections, and may the best party win. In other words, whether people support them for historical reasons or not is a separate issue. The point is that parties must stand on their own merits at the time that they take the voters to the polls. Whether voters choose them or not for those reasons is another thing altogether. But everyone, all parties are equal. They're all in the same sort of miserable little boats. No one has sort of special rights as a result of where they've come from, strictly speaking. That's different to whether people accord them that respect or not. That's a completely different thing. It's a fascinating and long and complicated issue. What I'm actually going to suggest is let me just talk about the period sort of up to, I'd like to just talk to you of the period up to where F.W. de Klerk sort of started to unban the ANC and released prisoners from jail. Okay. And the essence of it is that essentially in the 50s, the relationship between the South African Communist Party and the ANC became very, very tight. And to the extent that many members of the one were members of the other. And in the late 50s, the SACP reinstituted its relationship with the Soviet Union. After Sharpeville in 61, the decision was made by the ANC to embark on the armed struggle. And as I understand it, a lot of the force behind that decision was, came from the SACP. It had increasingly been supported by the USSR as a Cold War ally. That's the SACP and the ANC. And interestingly, and this is just a little side thing, a lot of the ANC cadres were trained in a variety of areas in the Soviet Union and East Germany, but they were also trained in Libya, and they trained together with the IRA and the PLO. And that partly goes to explain the relationship between the, sure, the ANC and the Palestinians. But at the same time, and one of the problems with the ANC in exile trying to create, you know, trying to embark on this armed struggle was it actually developed a reputation for probably being the most inept armed struggle in Africa.
Well, it's the oldest, so by definition it is, or was.
One of the problems, of course, was just where it was. It was largely forced to be in areas that weren't close enough to South Africa. So to try and get people back into the country was extremely difficult. And with all the, and I don't think there were, amongst them were great military minds. And as a result, you had cadres who became very disaffected, started to rebel, and then the ANC perpetrated its own horrors on its own people. So it all had, the one had an effect on the other. Now, came 1976, and you had the Soweto Revolt, which was organized by black consciousness groups. The ANC was not involved and got nothing from it. They were either largely in exile or in prison. The black consciousness, the black consciousness project essentially failed. But Inkatha benefited with an increase in its own membership. So that was the sort of dynamic that was taking place. The Soviet Union became worried that they had backed the wrong horse. So in 1978, they arranged for a delegation of the ANC to go to North Vietnam, which by then had essentially won the Vietnam War and was in charge of the country. And what the USSR was really trying to do was to get the ANC exposed to the formula for a successful people's war. Now, people's war was a Maoist strategy, which was really extremely well executed by General Vo Nguyen Giap, who was the North Vietnamese military strategist. The group included Oliver Tambo, Thabo Mbeki, Joe Slobo, and Joe Modise, Chris Harney, Alfred Nzor. It was a substantial group. And they were so impressed by what they'd seen that the ANC set out this strategy in something they called the Green Book Lessons from Vietnam. Now, the reason for the Green Book is that the Vietnamese Bible on the issue was a green book, a green cover.
I'm so sorry, we're going to have to stop you there because we actually have to get to news. We have to wrap up.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
I can do that. I'll do this in...
Will you please do this on Tuesday?
Sequences, yes. In sequels.
No, but yes. could you talk about this on Tuesday when you do the IRR show?
Yeah, I can do that too. But basically, essentially, that's where things turn.
Thank you very, very much.